This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Steve Inskeep is on assignment in Iowa. I'm Renee Montaigne at NPR West. The U.S. Supreme Court today hears arguments on the rights of detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. This is the third time the high court has taken up the question. The Bush administration lost both previous cases, but since then, Congress has passed laws allowing the president to do pretty much what he'd been doing all along. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg has more.
The Guantanamo prisoners challenging their detention come from all over the world. Most, but not all, were arrested in Afghanistan. The lead group was not. They are Bosnian citizens arrested in Bosnia shortly after 9/11 and after U.S. officials said the men were involved in a plot to blow up the U.S. embassy. Bosnian authorities then joined with Interpol and the U.S. to conduct a three-month investigation, at the end of which the Bosnian Supreme Court, with the concurrence of the Bosnian prosecutor, ruled that the charge was not supported by the evidence. The court ordered the men released, but they were quickly rearrested and taken to Guantanamo, where they've remained for 6 years, despite repeated statements from the Bosnian government that it's willing to take them back. The detainees claim that they have the right to challenge their imprisonment in the U.S. courts using the constitutionally guaranteed procedure called a writ of habeas corpus. Historically, the writ's been an important mechanism in safeguarding individuals from arbitrary imprisonment by the state. It guarantees the prisoner a chance to rebut charges against him in front of a neutral judge. The Guantanamo detainees contend there is no neutral judge at Guantanamo and no chance to know and rebut the evidence against them. The Bush administration counters that detainees have no constitutional rights because they're not being held in the United States, and that even if they do have some basic rights, the congressionally approved system of hearings for each prisoner at Guantanamo, plus review by a court of appeals here in Washington, is sufficient. Brad Berenson is a former associate White House counsel in the Bush administration.
It is literally unprecedented in the history of the world that an alien enemy fighter gets habeas corpus rights when they've been captured and held abroad.
But lawyers for the detainees say that their clients are not enemy fighters, that in fact they were erroneously scooped up, whether in Bosnia or in Afghanistan, where many were turned over by warlords for bounty. Tom Wilner is a lawyer for the detainees.
All we want is a process to determine whether they're terrorists or not. If they're terrorists or enemy fighters, hold them.
But, Wilner says, the process for evaluating the detainees was rushed into existence in 2004, 9 days after a Supreme Court ruling. And, he says, the Combat Status Review Tribunals, or CSRTs as they're called, are a sham with a deck stacked from the get-go. That view is backed by a wide variety of lawyers, including top-ranking retired military officers who filed briefs in this case. They contend that the officers on the tribunals are not neutral, as a military judge would be, that instead they are routinely pressured by higher-ups to ratify the detentions, and that the detainees have no realistic chance to prove their innocence since they're denied access to most of the evidence against them. Again, Tom Wilner.
I've been down to Guantanamo 12 times. I've seen this evidence. This evidence is the flimsiest stuff you have ever seen. It's a joke.
With less colorful language, that's the same thing that two active duty officers have now said in affidavits. One, Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Abraham, was for 6 months in charge of seeing to it that exculpatory evidence was transmitted to the tribunals from intelligence and defense agencies. He says in his affidavit that the evidence seen by the tribunals was incomplete, dated, and inaccurate, and that the officers serving on the panels were not able to question or test it.
It's not that the truth was never a goal, but it was the first victim.
Abraham, an experienced intelligence officer, says that most detainees have names that are extremely common in their part of the world, and that, in fact, the U.S. has little or no knowledge as to whether, to use a typical name as an example, we have the right Mohammed Assam in custody.
The odds are nil that they will have information about him. They may have lots of material on the other 57 Mohammed Assams from his region and the other 3,000 worldwide. So what you're going to get is every single report dealing with Mohammed Assam, Mohammed Assam, Mohammed Assam. You get literally a dozen name variants. God help the person who had the same name as a famous person, because all of that information would be ascribed to him and presumed to be valid.
The lawyers representing the detainees all have stories to tell. In the case of the Bosnians, for instance, the Supreme Court brief recounts a CSRT hearing where a detainee is charged with associating with an unnamed Al-Qaeda operative. The transcript of the hearing shows the detainee asking who was the person he was supposed to have associated with. But the tribunal chairman says he can't tell him because the name is classified. After much back and forth, the frustrated detainee says, "Maybe I knew this person as a friend. Maybe it was a person that worked with me. Maybe he was on my team. If you tell me the name, then I can respond and defend myself. Otherwise," he says, "all I can tell you is that I'm not Al-Qaeda." Another of the Bosnians sought to defend himself by asking the tribunal to look at the decision of the Bosnian Supreme Court ordering his release. But the CSRT panel concluded that the decision was, quote, "not readily accessible," even though it had been filed in federal court and given to the government. Colonel Abraham says that even when a detainee does manage to win a hearing, the tribunal is ordered to conduct a new hearing as many as 3 or 4 times until the detainee loses. David Rifkin, who served in the administration of the first President Bush, says that if you nudge the system to provide a higher level of scrutiny, the U.S. won't be able to hold most of the detainees.
Not because they're innocent, not because they're wrong Abduls, but because in war, you rarely have this kind of information.
Moreover, he notes, if something is really wrong at a CSRT hearing, the detainee can appeal to the D.C. Court of Appeals under the new law passed by Congress.
They do have meaningful opportunity for judicial review. And that, frankly, is more than any prisoner of war, any unlawful combatant ever had in any war in human history.
The lawyers for the detainees counter that the new law only gives the detainee a severely restricted appeal. What's more, says Cornell law professor Trevor Morrison, the law does not provide a key element of habeas corpus.
The main flaw is that the D.C. Circuit does not have the authority to do the thing that a habeas court would do in that circumstance, and that's to order the detainee's release.
All of these details are important because the Constitution does allow the suspension of habeas corpus rights, but only in times of invasion or rebellion, something that the detainee lawyers say has not happened here. Indeed, even when suspension is legitimate, the Supreme Court has required an alternative mechanism that is adequate and effective. Former Bush administration lawyer Brad Berenson says that the new law does provide a sufficient alternative to habeas corpus.
The executive and the legislative branches have come together, have arrived at some sensible policy choices and compromises that provide a reasonable regime for governing these relationships going forward. It's time for the court to step aside and let the process and the system work for a while.
The lawyers for the detainees contend that the process at Guantanamo may look good on paper, but in reality, it is a Kafkaesque farce. Tom Wilner, a partner in a Wall Street firm, uses some tough language.
What the government says is wrong. It's not true. It's a lie.
What's more, he says, Guantanamo is no different than Iowa. The U.S. has leased the land from Cuba in perpetuity. U.S. law applies there totally, and so the prisoners there cannot be exempt from the Constitution, as the government claims. But what about prisoners in other areas controlled by the United States? At Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan, for instance. If Guantanamo prisoners have a right to habeas corpus, would prisoners at Bagram too? That's one of the many thorny questions facing the Supreme Court today. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.